I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I play video games.
News and Rumors with your hosts, John DeLuna, XB,
X-Chicken,
Weebum.
Damn right I am.
And Rob.
Here we go!
News and Rumors.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna. This is a special new sound wave. First of all, we have Rob and Peter with me, but also with me, the Grand Poobah, the Granddaddy, yes, of RFC, the master of the TF Radio Network, Mr. Brian Kilby. Brian, how are you, sir?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. I'm terrific. We're in the shadow of greatness. This guy wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be here if this guy wasn't here, but he's here right now.
I would actually be here, just not doing this.
No, you would probably be playing a video game, though. There's a higher than zero chance you would be right now, perhaps. All it took to get Brian on the show was probably the game of the last, I would say, probably 3 or 4 years, easily, if you're into fighting games. And that is Street Fighter Cross Tekken. So Street Fighter Cross Tekken is coming out this week, and it is a crossover fighting game with Street Fighter and Tekken, the two biggest fighting franchises probably ever. And it's a tag game, which we'll get kind of into later in the show. But really, I just wanted to rap with you guys about fighting games in general, because I know Brian's big into fighting games, and I'm big into fighting games, and I'm certain you guys, Peter and Rob, have had a taste of a fighting game or two here or there. So they're fun, and they're unique, and they are different, and they've got their own cult following, and they're not quite like any other video game genre in the world, in that I think they may be video game at its purest. It's almost like Pong evolved to the highest level. It's like where Pong started off being like a competitive one-on-one fighting game, if you think of it that way, like a war of attrition. It's kind of evolved into this, where anybody who isn't into video games can look at a fighting game and figure out exactly what's happening. In some other genres, it's a little bit more obtuse, and, you know, they don't understand exactly what's happening. This is very clear. I'm controlling this guy, and the other guy's controlling that guy, and we're fighting each other, right? So it's very direct. It's also, because of that, it kind of has like a pureness to it, which I appreciate. So Brian, since you're the guest, I will open the floor to you. So tell us a little bit about your fighting game background, I guess.
Wow. Back, I guess it was 1992, thereabouts, I stepped into an arcade and I saw, for the first time ever, Street Fighter II Champions Edition. That was my first sort of step into fighting games, and I loved it. I never actually saw Street Fighter II at that point. I didn't get to go to the arcade that often. So, Street Fighter Street Fighter 2 for the NES came out, what, later that year?
Yes, that's right. They started overlapping. The home console and the arcade game started kind of overlapping a little bit.
So, my cousin picked it up. It was an expensive cart. At the point, I couldn't afford it, so I picked that up. And I really got into that. Then, eventually, Street Fighter 2 Turbo came out, and it was on. You know, I've really been more into the Street Fighter series. I guess, like everyone else, I flirted a little bit with Mortal Kombat. You know, Mortal Kombat 1 in the arcade was fun. The home ports were not that great. Though the home port of Mortal Kombat was actually what made me get a Genesis, because I wanted the blood. But I couldn't get that on my Super NES. I mean, other than the gameplay, the Super NES was basically superior to the Genesis. Just, I mean, graphically, the sound. It was much more faithful to the arcade. It just didn't have blood. If you go back now and try to play Mortal Kombat for the Genesis, which I did today, it's kind of crap. It really is.
But it's got blood, not buckets of sweat.
Yeah. So I basically, I, I really got into the Street Fighter Alpha series. I mostly skipped over Street Fighter 3. I'm sorry. I know. Really, what really took over, though, for me was Tekken. Tekken came out, and I was one of the early adopters for the PlayStation. I got that, and I played it quite a bit. It was okay, but there's not really a lot of depth to it. But Tekken 2 eventually came out to the arcades. In my arcade, at that point I was old enough to actually get to go to the arcade when I wanted to, and my local arcade picked that up, and I would just go and play that, and I just had such a blast playing it, and it came out at home, and at that point I was hooked. I probably easily spent 150 hours on Tekken 2 when it came out. Yeah, I know I spent 300 plus hours on Tekken 3. You know, then I sort of got into Soul Calibur, then I tried to get back into I guess the Versus Fighters on the Saturn that I ended up getting. But, you know, really, when it boils down to it, mostly what I play, or I've played for the last 10, 15 years, have been the Namco Fighters, Tekken and Soul Calibur. And really, I guess, even though I kind of consider myself more of a Soul Calibur player, when I really think about it, I have devoted a lot of my life into Tekken. And I really do love the Tekken series, even though it makes no sense whatsoever.
You mean the narrative?
Yes. Well, narrative quotes.
In fighting games, yeah, I don't know about that. I guess Mortal Kombat, actually, to get on that tangent, Mortal Kombat's probably made the most, like, serious attempt, I guess, at continuity. And even they blew it up with, like, Mortal Kombat 9. They were like, oh, everything that happened before, that was, like, one timeline, and we're going to jump into another timeline.
It's hard doing continuity in a fighting game, because with most games, you know, you have a narrative, then you have a definitive ending. Well, fighting games, there are different endings depending on who you play. So it's really hard to have a consistent story across all games that make any sort of sense. Because a sequel will come out, and the sequel will say, well, this person won. You know, I mean, it really doesn't work out to where you can have... Because it lacks a consistent narrative, it really almost makes the point of having a narrative moot.
True. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, especially right now the current Soul Calibur is a perfect example. Like, so they tried to take the narrative, I guess, seriously now. Retroactively, sort of. Like, all of a sudden, now the narrative is important. And so this game is now 15 years after the last game. So everyone in it is 15 years older than they were before. And, of course, you have to ignore the fact that they do the exact same moves. They're not any slower. They're just as aerobatic. Some of them have kids. So you play the kids, the offspring of some fighters, while other fighters are just older, but exactly the same. And it just overcomplicates the thing. I mean, also the fact that, I don't know, Tekken 6 has God knows how many fighters, 40-something.
That's a lot.
They all can have satisfying endings if it was all one continuity.
Oh, no. The thing I really liked about Tekken, especially, was the fact that it just had these off-the-wall endings. And they were pre-rendered, so you would be able to go in and see a little movie. You know, it was cool. That was great back in the PS1 era. Now, you know, the average TV show, you know, has pre-rendered crap in it. So seeing the CGI really doesn't really do anything for you in a 2012 world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I play the games because I enjoy them, because I want to get better at them. You know, I wanted to mention this when you were talking at the beginning. So I think in a lot of ways, the real value to fighting games, the real appeal is that people can reenact, I guess, through muscle memory, like really complicated strings and combos and, you know, pre-rendered or predefined strokes of the buttons and everything. That really sort of... For a while, that really was taken over by the music genre, because in a lot of ways, playing a song on Guitar Hero at a high level is really similar to the way that, you know, certain combos or certain things are accomplished in a fighting game. And that's other than the music genre, that's really not a kind of experience that you can get from any other, you know, genres.
Totally agree. Yeah, there's even techniques in fighting games, high-level techniques called, like, pianoing. You know, you piano the buttons. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of musical elements when you think about it. Rhythmic elements and things like that, muscle memory, all that stuff. Especially in games like Marvel vs. Capcom, that engine's really dependent on very long combos, very long sequences of inputs that essentially become instinct after a while. Ideally, instinct. For most mortals, it's a struggle. But Rob and Peter, we'll talk a little bit about like how much have you dipped your toe into fighting games, Rob?
Well, you know, I started out pretty similarly to Brian. I actually first played Street Fighter II at home. It was the reason I got a Super Nintendo. Stuck with pretty much that series throughout most of it. Most of the 16-bit era. Mortal Kombat was a lot more fun before they started taking Continuity 2 seriously. And when it still had a sense of humor about itself, I think. Just like Brian said, Alpha was a series I really loved. I never really got too much time in with any of the 3D fighters until very recently when I picked up Soul Calibur 2 through 4, basically. And I also skipped Street Fighter 3 at the time, but I've come back to that thanks to PSN and I'm really enjoying it. Except for things that really don't count, like imported Dragon Ball Z fighting games and the god-awful Star Wars fighting game, that's about the extent of my experience.
Awesome. You played Masters of Terrazkazi?
Yes, I did. I would say I owned it once, but fortunately that was my brother, so I don't have to admit that.
What the hell system was that on?
PS1.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yep, Terrazkazi. God.
Yeah, that sounds like a must play.
Go back and play Snowball number 1 or something. You would like that.
Okay. Peter, what about you?
So I've been doing fighting games for a really long time when I was... I actually don't remember what age I was when I started. My mom actually used to work for a vending company, so she did a lot with arcade games and stuff like that. And for the spare, you know, for the older games, she was able to bring home, you know, the boards, and then she built like a makeshift gaming cabinet. So the first thing I believe that I got into was Street Fighter. So the original Street Fighter, when Ryu was on the right side, was first player, and Ken was on the right side as second player, and Ryu had his little shoes, you know, his little red shoes. Actually, it was not that bad of a game. It was, I haven't played it for a long time, but back then it was a really great game. So, then we moved on to the consoles, so we moved on to SNES, and we played the Street Fighter II Turbo. We had a little, like, you know, controller. There was, like, this code that you would put on your right controller. There was, like, some crazy mishmash of SNES buttons, and then you would get like from three, you know, you had the Turbo, which was like 3 stars, but then you could get to 5. We tried 5 and the game almost crashed. It was pretty ridiculous. And then we stuck a lot through Street Fighter 2 was a lot of there was a lot of Super Nintendo thumbs through that. And I really liked the narrative on that, because for Ryu specifically, if you beat the game, he retreated somewhere that nobody knew, and he decided to dragon punch a waterfall through the rest of his life.
Yes.
That stuck with me too throughout the, you know, through today. I was like, were you dragon punching the waterfall?
It's a metaphor for life, really, right?
Right.
Or we could all take it literally and go try to punch water.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mortal Kombat was actually, when I was younger, was one of the games that was banned for my, from me actually being able to play it, because it was so bloody in the arcade and ripping people's spines out and stuff like that. So I actually never got into Mortal Kombat because I wasn't allowed to play it.
Interesting.
And I moved on to, like, you know, Alpha on SNES, which is funny because that was a loading on a cartridge is pretty funny. And then I kind of, you know, dotted throughout that time. I kind of played some Virtual Fighter, played some Soul Calibur, kind of picked it up. I kind of picked it up again when Street Fighter 4 came out, but I didn't, like, really invest in a joystick or anything, so I kind of lost interest. So I guess I should have done that, and then people, maybe I wouldn't have sucked so bad.
You know, for the longest time, there was a big stigma around playing fighting games with a pad, but that's essentially gone now. So, essentially, there is no difference between people who play with a joystick and people who they call pad warriors. Because some games, there's actually a fair percentage of people out there who think Mortal Kombat 9 is easier or better to play on a pad than on a stick. And there's quite a few top Street Fighter players who play on a pad. And that tends to be like character specific, but they're out there.
Yeah, I actually grew up playing Street Fighter 2 on the pad.
I think we all did.
Yeah, so I actually, whenever I play in the arcade, I kind of suck at it because I have the joystick.
Yeah, it's so different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and the things like, yeah, because it's interesting, like things like the 360 move in Street Fighter. For a lot of people, that's easier on a pad. You can do a 360 movement on a pad a lot faster and easier than, say, twirling a stick. So there's tricks like that. And then also, like, with the Mortal Kombat, just the inputs are a lot simpler. It's, like, down, forward for a fireball motion instead of down, down, forward, forward for a fireball motion. With a pad, that can be easy. It can be easier to do those kind of fast, simplified inputs.
I kind of go both ways. You know, certain games I can play well on a pad. I think ultimately I do better on my X Arcade stick, which I bought that and I gutted it and I replaced it with HAPS Cherry Switches. But it, you know, if no other option, you know, I'm nearly as good with a pad, even a 360 pad, as I am with a stick.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
With the 360 pad. So guys, one of the things that I did want to talk about too is also 3D versus 2D. So in America, 2D has always kind of ruled the day. So, you know, in the glory days of fighting games, 2D. It was 2D fighting games, 2D fighting games. Japan has kind of actually come around to 3D fighting games, if you consider that Tekken is still the most popular fighting game on that side of the world. So they're very different. They're very, very, very different. And lots of people credit Street Fighter IV with bringing back fighting games to prominence in 2008. And as we know, Street Fighter IV is a 2D game. It's got 3D character models, but it's a 2D game. And that probably had a huge part of its resurgence and its success, because all along we had Soul Calibur games and we had Tekken games here. But they had never caught on, and the genre had kind of steadily declined. But it took a Street Fighter 2D game to make it big, and all of a sudden everything is kind of back instantly. So, I mean, I'm unapologetically a 2D guy. I like to mess around with Soul Calibur games, Tekken to a lesser extent, but I'm a 2D guy. Brian, so where do you kind of stand on that?
It's kind of hard for me now to play a 2D fighting game. I've been playing Tekken and Soul Calibur so long that the concept of being, and I hate to say it, restricted to two dimensions, it's just kind of difficult. Not that there's any, I mean, major issue. I can go back and play Street Fighter 2 Turbo and, you know, be fine, and I can do all that, but I don't really see the point. Other than Street Fighter, like when Street Fighter 4 came out, I was kind of hoping that they would maybe crack the nut and figure out how to do Street Fighter in 3D, because this X game certainly didn't do it. I mean, terrible. I mean, Street Fighter EX is plus alpha. Awful. Yeah. But, I mean, it works for that, but it feels, I don't know, a little simplified, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a bad way of putting it. But, I mean, the game itself, I mean, it's all about the twitch gameplay. It's all about the fast reaction. And it retained, I mean, obviously it does a great job with that. So I'm not a huge Street Fighter 4 fan, but I am really looking forward to Street Fighter Cross Tekken. More so than Tekken Cross Street Fighter, if it ever comes out.
Yeah, it'll come out. It'll be, that one may actually be a more interesting experiment, just from a conceptual.
They still don't even know how they're going to do fireballs.
Yeah, so, I mean, that alone will make it, I guess, worthwhile. A worthwhile experiment. I mean, we'll just see kind of what happens. The Street Fighter Cross Tekken is something that it was kind of obvious how they're going to do it, right? So, I mean, it's much easier to throw something into the Street Fighter engine. You kind of know what's going to happen. But if you throw something that's 2D into 3D, then it starts getting really hairy. So, Rob, what about you? Do you have any, like, thoughts on the difference between 3D and 2D?
I'm much more comfortable with 2D games. I always have been. I think that's probably why I've never gotten really deeply into Soul Calibur or Tekken the way I can still play the old Capcom 2D fighters. I don't know if it's just that I never really got, used to that change in the style of gameplay, or just that other axis of movement really throws me, but like I said, just much more comfortable with 2D games. I'm not great at them, but that only being able to move in a straight line just makes it a little bit easier for me to cope.
I agree totally. I'm way more into 2D gaming myself, because I think that I like platformers, not like classic gaming. But the thing about the 3D gameplay in a fighting game, it's still kind of restricted because you're still dealing with a small space. Like in an open world 3D game, you can go off and then you can go to your aunt's, kitchen in her apartment in Queens if you wanted to, if the game is, designed in such a way, and you can just get lost in it. But what I like about a fighting game, it has that same sort of smallness that a 2D game, the quality that a 2D game has.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. There's that intimacy with it, which is interesting. Honestly, one of my pet peeves, before we get to Peter, is the concept of a ring out just bothers the hell out of me. It always bothered the hell out of me to lose by ring out. So, Peter, what do you think?
I grew up in 2D games, so 2D, fighting, stuff like that. And, the ring out was definitely an interesting thing, like, when I, Virtual Fighter and Soul Calibur and stuff like that, it was definitely like, oh, okay, that's kind of cheesy, they just ring out people. And also another game, actually, I completely breezed over this, but it's not your traditional, like, super serious fighting game, but the Smash Brothers franchise on the Nintendo platform is a 2D game, but there's really off or knocking them into the air, and they kind of, like, disappear into the stratosphere, but I actually got really serious into that game. I followed through, Nintendo 64, Melee, and then Brawl and everything. And that's actually a pretty fantastic game. It blends, so many characters and so many types of fighting together on a 2D platform that it makes you really never miss 2D, like 2D versus 3D gaming, because there's just so much going on that if they tried to execute that on 3D, it'd just be a disaster.
Now, did you know that there's, like, a serious, major Smash community out there? Like, heavy-duty competitive play.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I'm not surprised. It's definitely a game that's easy to pick up, but, it takes a while to master. So, it's, I have played with terrible people, I've played with really great people, and it's just, like, it's crazy to see how vast of a difference it is, despite the fact that there's such a small learning curve to the game.
They get kind of a hard time from the Street Fighter, from the Capcom and Namco gamers, as you imagine, but they get pretty good attendance. I mean, and it gets pretty heated. In fact, the biggest news, I guess, coming out of that community this year, and I think it was this year, or certainly like in December, maybe at the latest, was they finally banned Meta Knight in competitive play, and it took them literally 2 years, 3 years to make that decision.
Yeah, I don't blame him for banning Meta Knight. He's hella cheap.
Brian,
it's from the Kirby world.
Yeah. Yeah, is he he's just like a he's not even like a. Is he a major character in the Kirby universe, or is he just? Because he's not like the main villain.
I do not think he is.
Okay, he just happens to be from the Kirby universe, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, he's broken as hell.
It's kind of like when they break it. It's kind of like when they busted in the Fire Emblem guys. Like a lot of the people before they came into the Smash Brothers game, Fire Emblem was relatively unknown in the gaming community. So, and then they started bringing them like a lot of their games over after their success of that franchise.
Gotcha, gotcha. So, Peter, you mentioned that you got a hard time because of Mortal Kombat, because of the blood and gore. Did anybody else, like, get a hard time from their folks when it came to that kind of stuff, or was Mortal Kombat kind of a non-issue with you guys growing up?
Non-issue.
Non-issue.
It was kind of an issue with my mom at first, but by the second time the second one came around, I talked her into it, primarily because my father especially does sometimes have a kind of morbid sense of humor, and when I showed him what was going on with that, he realized that it was not anything to particularly worry about. So
the only thing my mom cared about was the fact that the car was $80.
Was it Mortal Kombat 2 was $80?
Yeah, I remember I spent $75-$80 on it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Holy crap!
That sounds about right. Actually.
I forgot how much more those used to cost.
Yeah.
That's insane. Obviously I didn't buy anything back then when I was a kid. Didn't have any money, so I didn't know that $80.
Yeah, I was actually going through, I've been going through my stuff, sort of straightening things up, and I sort of reflected back on my high school when I was looking at my yearbooks from high school, and I only have three, because my sophomore year, I ended up taking the money that I was going to put on my annual, and I got Mortal Kombat 2.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
You don't need it. You know, in the between those years, they're not necessary.
Since then, I've put Mortal Kombat 2 in my SNES way more than I've ever opened those books.
See?
See?
Yeah, that's money well
spent. You don't need all four of them. You just need one.
Well, the Street Fighter Turbo for the Super Nintendo was like $80. It was
24 meg cart, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it? Really? Oh, wow.
Wasn't Super up around 90, or did they drop the price for that?
It was about the same. I don't remember anything coming out that much for the SNES. The Genesis had Phantasy Star 4 and Virtua Racing, and those were expensive because of the extra memory. But and the Virtua Racing actually had an extra chip in it, so they could play it. But I think Super Street Fighter was still about the same price, even though it was a 32 meg card.
I remember that it was fairly expensive at the time, and that's why I never got it, but I did not remember the specific price.
Actually, I think Super might have been a 32 meg card on the Genesis. It might have actually been smaller on the SNES, because I know they dropped, in the beginning of that, Ruth throwing the fireball, I know they dropped frames on that and a couple other things, so I think they made some sacrifices on the SNES.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. I think you're right. Turbo... I remember playing the Super NES Street Fighter 2 Turbo game like the day it came out, and even as like I guess I don't know what that was. That was like 93 or 4 or something. Yeah, playing that game is when I realized, oh, arcades aren't going to be around much longer, because this game is good. This is like essentially the arcade game as far as I cared.
As far as if you go back now and compare the two, I mean, obviously the arcade game looks a lot better, but it was so close that it did not matter.
Right, right, mm-hmm. yeah, that was the point. It was like you could like, or at least you know, I was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of the end, I guess, of the arcade. Like thinking like, why I don't want to go. I don't. All of a sudden, like the drive to go to the arcade was like cut in half, or it was like there was like a big hole blown in that. Like, why would I go to the arcade when I can play this, which is good enough, and have friends over at my house, and that, right. You know what I mean? Like, why would I have to go to the arcade? And, you know, as we know, it kind of started from there. I guess certainly the generation after the Super Nintendo could pull off anything you'd want to play, you know.
For the most part. I mean,
for the most part, yeah.
And they make quite a few sacrifices. Like, if you compare Tekken 3 home to the arcade, Tekken 3, I think, was done on the System 32 board, System 30. Mm-hmm. Basically PlayStation 1 with more memory, and they couldn't pull off all of the polygons and the home port. But Tekken 2 is dead on perfect, because it was based on, you know, a PlayStation. So, but there are a lot of games. Alpha still wasn't quite as good as what they could do on a CPS2 board. But for the most part, yeah, whatever you wanted to do. Now, on the Saturn, the 2D games, once you had the 4 meg RAM cart, you know, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, you actually dabbled in a little bit of Dreamcast the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Streaming that experimentally. And, yeah, I mean, that's perfectly fine. Marvel vs. Capcom 2. perfect. You know what I mean?
I mean, the arcade board for Marvel vs. Street Fighter. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was a Dreamcast. I mean, it was I think it was the Stella hardware.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, so it's the same thing. I mean, it was pixel perfect.
Okay, so one last thing before the random hypothetical I did want to talk about is the idea of kind of how games have been treated over the years by the different makers. So Capcom, Namco, and Midway, Warner Brothers, whatever. Capcom's been famous for being so reluctant to add a number to Street Fighter, right? So we had Street Fighter 2 for damn near probably 7-8 years, something like that, before they flipped the switch on it. But we had, like, you know, we had 4 or 5 major reiterations of Street Fighter 2, something like that. We had Championship Edition, Turbo, Super, Super Turbo. I think that's
That was the only thing that came out in the arcade, yeah.
Yeah, so that was it.
It's like Rainbow.
And then we get 3, and 3 had 2 sequels. So Second Impact, Third Strike, and then you had Alpha. So that allowed them to kind of go off on a completely different tangent. And then finally, in 2008, you had Street Fighter 4. Whereas Tekken just keeps rolling along, adding characters and adding numbers. I think, like I said, they're up to probably close to 50 characters in Tekken 6, and about 10 of them are viable, maybe, at this point. Like, if you want to play to win.
I want to play as Kuma all day long.
You should play as Kuma.
Or Mukujin.
Do bear dance. By the way, he does the bear dance as a wind pose in Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Yeah, actually, Namco really only did the non-numbering thing twice. I mean, I guess you could say Dark Resurrection was basically Tekken 5.5, and Tekken Tag, of course, was basically 3.5, and it, you know, but an extra number. But yeah.
And then, I guess on a different thing. Oh yeah, I should also add that for the most part, they're not very experimental in what they've done with the games. With Street Fighter, it's kind of been a steady kind of evolution, I guess. And with Namco's games, again, like, not very experimental. Mortal Kombat's been really experimental. They've gone from 2D to 3D back to 2D. Is there any way that the companies have treated their franchises that you think is better than the others? Or do you think they have all, you know, kind of treated them decently? I'm kind of the mind that, in theory, I like the way Midway and Warner Brothers has treated Mortal Kombat. They certainly tried to. They've blown it up twice. I don't think it's worked for the most part, but theoretically, I respect the way they've done it. And then Capcom, I would probably say my personal feelings are they're actually the worst. Like, they put out the games I like, but the way they treat the properties and the fans, I feel is pretty despicable. Rolling out, you know, marginal improvements to the game at $40 and $50 a pop, $60-$70 sometimes a pop is pretty shitty. But that's Brian, what do you think?
If you look at the home versions of Street Fighter 2, you had Street Fighter 2, then you had Turbo. And Turbo was a pretty huge jump over Street Fighter 2. I mean, yeah, I mean, it was iterative, but it was less iterative than, say, going from Tekken 2 to Tekken 3. Maybe that's not me. Tekken 3 to Tekken 4. And Tekken 4 side. But, you could argue that going from Turbo to Super, which was released, wasn't a positive, or it wasn't a step forward, but it was, again, it was pretty not radically different, but it was pretty different. It was I never felt cheated by paying that. Now, that was less the case with Street Fighter 3. I mean, I think there was less of a difference between, you know, Street Fighter 3, Double Impact and Third Strike, I mean, than the others. But I never once felt cheated by, Street Fighter Alpha and Alpha 2 and Alpha 3. I always thought those were a big enough jump to justify it. But of course, maybe I had been programmed by Capcom. But, you know, I mean, they haven't really changed a lot, but, I think maybe they haven't respected the fans, but, you know, I've been happy. I mean, maybe it's an abusive relationship. But, you know, if I had to pick a strategy that I like the best, we can go with Tecmo, because Dead or Alive basically started in the gutter, and it's, you know, just, you know, maybe elevated a little bit here and there. Now I play it, and I don't really feel dirty anymore playing it, but I still have just as much fun, though, as I had in 1997, 98 when it came out. So
you like the way it's, like, I guess, stayed true to itself, I guess? Or, like, improved, like, stayed in its own little world, just gotten better at
it? It basically went from, like, the trailer park to, like, I don't know, to Hooters. You know, it got a job, and it's, you know, it's making...
Okay.
Oh,
got it, like an associate's degree?
Yeah, I got an associate's degree, so, you know, now it's a cosmetologist. And it's,
okay.
Trade
school.
Yeah.
We just completely failed
to mention Dead or Alive. Not that it really warrants much of a mention, but, you know, it's up there.
You know what we shouldn't fail to mention for Dead or Alive? That movie that came out.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yes. Hey, they're coming out with another Dead or Alive this year, by the way. And they've actually bent over backwards saying it's not a competitive game. I don't know what that means. Like, they've said it's for entertainment only, not necessarily high-level competitive gameplay.
John, what do you think, John, about going back to your question before the other sort of expand on this? What do you think about the way that SNK handled its fighting games? Do you think it treated the fans in a... Like, you know, all the Fighters History, that's a different game entirely, that was Data East. The King of Fighters series, do you think that was shortchanging fans?
I think when you get into the world of annualized sequels, you are cheating the fans, and there's no way to get around that. Part of your strategy is getting an easy paycheck every year from the fans, because all of a sudden now you're on a schedule every September or whatever. Everybody counts on you cranking out a game. There's no way quality can be at its highest. There's no way creativity can be maximized. And it, like I said, it becomes just an easy kind of paycheck. It becomes Madden. And that's really weird. That's really, really weird for a fighting game genre. So, and then also on top of that, I think the King of Fighters, if we're talking strictly about King of Fighters, because it's really the only one that has survived from those days, the original strategy of King of Fighters, as I understood it and as they marketed it, was it was this big mashup of SNK characters, not only from Fighters, but prominent SNK characters from all their other properties. And somewhere along the line, fairly early in the King of Fighters family of games, they decided to start spending more time creating new characters for the series, which completely missed the boat, I felt. So when half the roster are characters that didn't exist before King of Fighters, it's not really what it was promised to be. So I would say SNK has not handled their property very well. One of the other big signs of this is the fact that King of Fighters is the only surviving SNK Neo Geo franchise.
There's still a Samurai Showdown disc, you know, or a couple at my local Walmart, at least one.
Okay,
the anthology on the PSP still. I don't even have any of the King of Fighter games. Even that one that came out, like, last fall or whatever it was.
Oh, really? 13? 13 is supposed to be a really good game. It's supposed to be incredibly, an incredibly high learning curve. It's supposed to be very difficult to play, but satisfying if you can do it. But, you know, back in the day, Fatal Fury had its moments.
Fatal Fury, right? Play that. King of Fighters. Yeah.
Mark of the Wolves had its moment. Art of Fighting had its moments. World Heroes was never really a prominent game, but those other two properties, for a time, were probably like a strong third or fourth in the arcade as far as popularity goes. And those franchises are dead. They've been absorbed into King of Fighters and largely forgotten. So that kind of just shows like a real carelessness by SNK over the years. Because if you look at Namco, Namco still has Soul Calibur, which is very strong. They still have Tekken, which is very, very strong. So they've kind of held on to their properties and kind of flourished them. They haven't had the financial problems, obviously, that SNK has, or the multiple owners over the years that SNK has kind of had. But, I mean, still, it's a real shame when you look at Neo Geo fighting games and kind of what's happened to them, because it's all kind of devolved into a series that doesn't have much focus and has very spotty quality, honestly, in the last 5 or 6 years. It's a shame. I don't know. It's a shame. So, guys, any other thoughts on fighting games before we wrap it up?
Well, in terms of, you know, the incremental approach, what Capcom does, the way I feel about it is pretty much the same way I feel about Dynasty Warriors, which is the same approach, which is that if you buy every single one, yeah, you're going to pretty much get screwed. But I tended to skip around. After the SNES, the next Street Fighter I bought was Alpha 3, and that was pretty damn incredible compared to what I had played before. And then after that, the next one I played was Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. And, you know, if you're not gonna be, you know, in there with every installment, the gradual evolution really does pay off when you come back to a series two or three games later. That's not what they want you to do, obviously, but, you know, you can see the results of basically using some of those intermediate installments as kind of beta tests for the latest game when you've been away for a while. I don't know how to describe it, but it's a much better feeling when you're you know, only doing it occasionally and not getting hosed for $50 every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That's and you know, the thing is, but also the thing is too, that's like if we were back in the arcade days, I wouldn't have any problem with this kind of, I guess, strategy that Capcom employed, because that's a very good strategy to get people to keep coming back to the arcades if every year or so, or even in some cases with Street Fighter, 8 months, 9 months later, there's a new Street Fighter out there. The psychology is different. I'd probably be gladly walk into an arcade and pour another $60 into that machine, that new cabinet. And it's essentially the same strategy. It just feels weird to have to walk into a game store and drop down $60 all at once for a new game less than a year later, which has happened with Marvel 3, actually, Marvel vs. Capcom 3. It had a sequel come out about 8 months after the first game. The first game cost $60, the second game cost $40, but that's still, over the course of a year, 10 months, you've spent $100 on a, you know, one relatively new game. Essentially, it's the same game. I mean, it's, you know, it's a rebalanced, refined version of the game, but it's still, you spent $100 on it. That's a very different feeling than, like I said, walking into an arcade one day and seeing a new cabinet there.
And that may be dangerous to Capcom in the long term, because really, Street Fighter 4 and Marvel vs. Capcom 3 are, you know, the first games I would say are like fully post-arcade fighting games that they have made. I mean, even Street Fighter 3 kind of came in on the tail end of the arcade, but, you know, these are the ones that have flourished on the console more than the arcade, and they're still using the old playbook, and that may become a problem if they keep doing things like this in the future.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, as a testament to that, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, I don't have the numbers right here, but apparently the sales were really bad for Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and a lot of that probably is attributed to the fact that casual fans don't buy games like hardcore fighting game fans. So they bought a Marvel vs. Capcom 3 game 8 months ago. Why would, you know, the casual fan thinks to himself, why would I buy that game again? I don't want to, and I won't. And so apparently its sales were really, really bad, really under forecast. The other thing too, Rob, you bring up a good point. So those are the first games, this batch of games coming out in the last couple years, or I would say probably since Street Fighter 4, they're the first games where online play on the console is really viable. So it, and the connections are really good, and the lag time is acceptable. And so we're kind of back to the point when arcades died, and there really was no online play for fighting games, the genre went away. Now that we're back to, there's competitive play again. It doesn't matter where you are. Without your console, you can tap in and play just about anybody in the world, certainly anybody on your own continent, and have a good quality experience. And we're seeing the genre come back. I don't think those are coincidences. And I think there's a good opportunity for us to get back into an extended golden age for fighting games, because it's we're in a time where, like I said, you can play people online. The one danger, though, that you bring up, though, is burnout. So, you know, Capcom may get greedy, and they may start doing annualized sequels. They may start doing these super and ultimate updates to games within the calendar year of the first release. One of the things that they said with Street Fighter Cross Tekken is they've said repeatedly there will only be one disc for this game. So any updates to the game from here to eternity will be DLC. That probably makes it a lot easier for them to crank out DLC left and right, or get a little bit greedy and release updates digitally. It doesn't make them think twice when they have to release a new disc and all the expenses that come with it. So there's going to be a danger there. And you know, here's another like final example before we wrap it up. The PlayStation Vita version of Street Fighter Cross Tekken will have 12 more characters than the console version. And they've already announced those. And they've only hinted that, strongly hinted, we know what's going to happen. They've only strongly hinted that the consoles will get those as DLC much later than the PS Vita version. So for a good 8 or 9 months, though, who knows how long it'll take, the PS Vita, the handheld, will have the definitive version of the game, which feels really strange. It feels really strange. It also feels really strange that they've essentially told us, here's the big DLC for the game that isn't out yet, and we'll tell you at a later date when to expect this DLC. But in the meantime, you know, have fun with this game, knowing that in the back of your head, it's not finished. You know, we know that, you know, their complete vision for the game is, they have it, they're finalizing it, but they won't give it to you for 8 or 9 months. It feels a little dirty.
I think if they really cared about the characters that they have on the Vita version, they would have included them on the disc. That they would have been games that would have come out when the game launched. They're afterthoughts. I mean,
So, John, what kind of characters are in there that aren't right?
Let me look them up real quick.
I know that Mega Man and Pac-Man, which are coming out on the PS3, like a week after the game launches, will be free DLC at least.
Yes. But these are different. Yes, that's kind of a promotion, obviously worked out through Sony. And when asked, Capcom's been asked a couple times, why aren't there any exclusive characters for the 360? And it's essentially because they couldn't come to a financial agreement, obviously, in time with Microsoft. So here are the extra characters that are going to be on the Vita and later on consoles. On the Capcom side, it's Elena from Street Fighter 3, yeah. Guy, Cody, Sakura, Dudley, and Blanca. And then on the Tekken side, it is Alisa, Christy, Jack, Brian, Lars, and Lei. So
There's some important characters there. Maybe it wasn't an afterthought. Maybe they are just being dicks.
I think they're being pretty dickish here. I think they're being pretty dickish here. Yeah. But it's really, oh, by the way, the character models for those extra characters are on the disc.
Yeah.
So it's the thing where you basically just download like a 5K, you know, unlock code.
Or the DLC is going to be surprisingly small. Like the file size is going to be surprisingly
small. Don't be surprised if all you have to do is buy a code for like $20.
Mm-hmm. That sucks.
So I think that, yeah, there's a huge slippery slope when it comes to DLC nowadays, right? Like there are a lot I think there was a Gears game. I think there was like one of the Gears of War games where it was like the DLC was already on the disc. You just had to buy it.
That's how like all of the stuff for Street Fighter 4 is.
Right. So it's definitely a slippery slope. Like they're doing the Street Fighter Cross Tekken because, you know, PlayStation was like, it wouldn't be a great idea if you released it on Vita so people could buy it. And then some savvy enough guy was able to find out that, you know, that crap is already on the disc that you bought for your console. So it's definitely nowadays. You guys are right. The DLC is the next way forward. Unfortunately, because they're going to charge you an arm and a leg for it, and there's no way to get it you know, this is also another way for them to combat, you know, buying old games, such as yada yada, right? Because you can't buy old DLC from anybody.
Yeah, it's especially dangerous on fighting games too, because the beauty, I guess, of a fighting game when you really get into it is that it's like any video game. So the game doesn't change. It's the players that get better with the cards that they're dealt, right? So if you keep updating and rebalancing a video game, a fighting game, you keep adding new characters, which changes the dynamic. You keep messing around with it. It's impossible for the game players to feel like they are progressing or that they are perfecting their gameplay inside the system, because the game keeps changing. You can't latch on to like a moving target like that.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it, in terms of being a competition, it's not really a fair competition if everybody doesn't have the same tools.
Yes, so. So, you know, that like, so Street Fighter IV is already in that boat. So Street Fighter IV has had two updates. It's got Super Street Fighter IV, and then it has Super Street Fighter IV Arcade Edition. The only difference between Super and Arcade Edition are two additional characters and some significant rebalancing of the game. For online play, you can play anyone with a earlier version of the game, but obviously... that creates problems. So, you know, when you're doing your online matchups and you have Arcade Edition, but your opponent only has Super Edition, you're going to have to play by... They can't obviously choose the characters that are on the Arcade Edition disc or, you know, that. I mean, they can't choose characters they haven't bought. They can choose to play by the rebalanced rules of Arcade Edition. Or you, with the Arcade Edition settings, can choose to play by their Super Edition balancing rules. And you start to get into this weird... It's just this weird balancing act of, like, what game are we playing at any given moment? You could be playing two different games at any moment. It's kind of your choice. And one guy's got two extra characters that you can fight against, but you can't play with. It's just really, really weird. So DLC could actually... be a very detrimental thing if it's not handled right with fighting games, with this genre in particular. Okay, guys, I want to wrap this up with a tested tradition on New Soundwave. It is the random hypothetical, and in honor of our special guest, Brian, I have come up with a random hypothetical that involves bodily discharge and a lot of money. So here is the choice. It's not an either or. It's a package deal. For $50 million, you have to have explosive diarrhea between the hours of 5 and 7 p.m. every day. I will give you $50 million, but in return, you will have explosive diarrhea between 5 and 7. You won't know when. You got a 2-hour window every day for the rest of your life. Will you take it?
I already have it between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., so, I mean, it's not like it matters.
This doesn't negate that, by the way. So maybe you're going to have two power sessions every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, all right, you're going to power through it for $50 million.
Yes.
Fight through it. Okay, all right, Rob, will you take it?
No, don't think I will. Just don't want to cope with that if I can help it.
Every day, $50 million, you could, you know, be financially secure and how for the rest of your life. But it's not worth that. It's not worth fire down below every day.
Dude, you can have
no. You can just PM or AM. That's the real question.
PM in the night.
PM.
During the dinner hour. Yeah, Peter, are you gonna take it? Okay.
All right. What I would do is I would just get a really awesome state-of-the-art bidet or something like that.
Interesting. I don't know if that's a good idea with explosive diarrhea. It's kind of like, it's like in Dragon Ball Z when Goku throws like a powerful beam and the monster of the week throws a powerful beam. It's like these two like huge streams of horrible power, you know, kind of intersecting, and it kind of moves back and forth, I guess, on who's going to win. I don't know if like a bidet versus explosive diarrhea is what I would spend my money on, I guess. Okay, so,
well,
so
I mean,
Brian,
bidet, not gonna cost.
No, me. I'm just saying, like, there could be bad consequences when you have like a giant gush of water versus like the $50 million explosive diarrhea of Peter.
For $50 million, I could pay XB to clean it up. It's worth it.
Exactly. Yeah,
would
you
take
know,
that?
It would be worth it.
Yeah, I guess XB needs the money, right?
Yes.
He's all about money. He's all, and maybe that would be sweet. Maybe you would actually, the explosive diarrhea would actually become a good thing, because you would, it would mean XB has a new career, right?
So a career.
Well, I mean, there is advancement there. You could offer him like a nice incentive package, and you know, the potential to move upward and onward. Maybe a nice little merit increase every year. Living expenses, right? Living expenses. Okay, so Brian will take the money, Rob will not, and Peter will take the money. I have a feeling, like, by the time you guys are 50, 55 years old, you're going to be wishing that you were Rob, with his clean ass and his modest home. See? Be a nicer life. I, for the record, yes, I will take the money. I will take the money. If I need, like, a colon transplant someday, I can find, like, some, you know, nice Taiwanese boy in a village, purchase that. I need an ass transplant, I could sure find somebody. Again, you know, like, in some lowland village, with my $50 million. That's right. Okay, so that'll do it for New Soundwave. For the week of, God, I don't know. What is this week? It's the first weekend of March. How about that? Time flies. If you're going to play Street Fighter Cross Tekken, perhaps you will see Brian and I online. And we will take you on, sucka. I'm coming for you, Hogan. We're coming for you, nigga. Until next week. If you got that reference, I love you. I am John. For Brian, for Rob, for Peter. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
2-1-0.
Take what we want, and after we take Lex Luger and the Giant, we want the gold, sucker! Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga!
This has been New Soundwave. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production.